This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com. Hello, welcome to Startup to Success. My guests today are Santos Agustin and Jennifer Wong. They are the co-founders of Gone to the Dogs, a social enterprise dedicated to reimagining thoughtfully designed and ethically sourced pet goods, handcrafted by inspiring makers locally and globally. Jennifer, Santos, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us and having us here, by the way. We very much appreciate your platform.
My pleasure. I'm so excited. I know before we jumped on this show, I was telling you about the colors that you guys have selected. I've never seen pet products that are so beautiful. It makes me want to go buy a dog, I swear.
But that's the goal.
Yeah, I have a newborn, so maybe in a year, because I feel like dogs are so much, pets are a lot of work. They're like babies. You need to take care of them, and I love them, but right now I do not have the time to take care of them. But guys, welcome. I'm so excited. I can't wait to dive in and talk about your company. But before we begin, I just want to know the why behind your company. What inspired you guys to start?
I can take this answer. The number one inspiration were our rescue dogs themselves. I think Jen and I realized very early on in the inception of our business that people were starting to see dogs more as members of their family than they were just pets. And companions took on a completely different meaning in this day and age. And we were proven right with the pandemic and with all the adoption of puppies and kittens, and how these animals weren't just pets, but they really helped us through the pandemic. And that just proved our theory. But so first and foremost, our own dogs, the way that we loved them, the way that we treated them, the way we wanted them dressed, the toys that we wanted them to play with, that is the number one inspiration, Miles and Ollie. Shout out to Miles and Ollie out there. Miles is under the couch, but.
Jennifer, so I'm gonna come back to you now a little bit. Tell us, a little bit about what's the one thing that you guys had to figure out. I'm sure there were a lot of things that you guys had to figure out as you were starting this amazing social enterprise, but what's the one thing that you can share with our listeners?
Wow, I'm just trying to think of like all the big things. Like when we first started, I think the big decision factors were, I mean, one of the things off the top of my head was our logo and our name. Santos and I are very particular about what we wanted to call it. We had a huge list and we had several renditions of the logo. And, we wanted it to mean something. It was, you know, the naming of our first child, in essence. That's what that whole procedure was. And, you know, how did we end up deciding? Did we do a survey, Santos?
We crowdsourced the favorite names that struck people. And also the process was what names were already not taken.
Right.
So we did go through a trademarking process as well. It needed to be distinctive. It needed to have personality. And it needed to be meaningful for us, as well as striking a chord with the people that we trusted.
It also was hard because not everyone liked the name we ended up choosing. So It was, you know, definitely trying to figure out what gravitated towards our market, but also what made sense to us.
So when it comes to naming and branding, and you want the name to be easily spelled, you know, a lot of people, I own a marketing agency, and when a lot of the startups come to us and they're like, well, we want to start advertising on radio or podcast, the name needs to be easily heard. Like, you can't choose a name that's so complicated that people cannot spell. You know, how are they going to find you? So I love the name. I think Gone to the Dogs is pretty simple. It's easy to remember. It's easy to spell. So I think you guys did a hell of a job here. So good job on that. Tell me a little bit about, I guess, the startup journey. You know, what were some of the challenges and the opportunities that you guys came across?
I think I touched on this very lightly. We launched in the middle of the COVID pandemic, the very beginning of it, actually. So I think that was a huge challenge for us right out the gate. I think we had to figure out if this was the time for us to, you know, to launch. And we had to think about it, and we're like, if we don't do this now, when are we going to do it? And I think a lot of entrepreneurs or people that are thinking about becoming entrepreneurs, I think fear plays a huge factor in whether or not they start their business, whether it gets off the page. And I think for us, we knew if we weren't going to do it then, we weren't going to do it. So, you know, we did it.
I love that. I love that. And honestly, what better time than the time when we were all locked in and not able to go outside and do what we usually normally do. Now, in terms of where do you sell your product? Is it solely online?
Well, we started online. So when, you know, we launched, it was the pandemic, all the stores were, I mean, we started off as an online business, like, you know, inherently, naturally, as all businesses go online, easier. But then, you know, everyone was online at the same time. And it's pretty competitive, let alone then all of a sudden very saturated with businesses who are normally brick and mortars, but then also online. So we actually, what we did is we started doing physical markets. So we started popping up at, like, next to the farmer's market and artisan markets outside, where, you know, people who are walking their dogs could not miss us. So they would stop and we would, you know, engage with our customers then, introduce our brand then. And so now, after 2 years of popping up, almost 2 years of popping up now, we call them pop-ups. We're still popping up, but we also now have a brick and mortar that we opened up, I think June of this year. Yeah, now it's our 1 year anniversary this month.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks. We're super excited and can't believe it's already been a year.
Yeah.
But the in-person sales has been tremendous. And, you know, people come in with their dogs, they come in with their cats. And it's just, it's, in a way, we just kind of confirmed and consolidated our brand, which is to really be very involved with the community and be a part of the journey in terms of our dog community. So, you know, we're here, we're physically here, and we love it.
Yeah. I want to just amplify that message that Jen is saying. Basically, we went to where our customers were. So, and a lot of it was luck too. Our very first holiday market was literally in a dog park. Wow. So, you know, we lucked out on that. It's very, you know, you have to go to where your customers are if you can't find them where you are. So we did a lot of research in terms of even where, not just pop-ups and parks, but also, like, where we wanted our first brick and mortar to be. You know, what's the foot traffic like? How, you know, how many dogs are in the neighborhood? So I would say it was intentionally lucky. We noticed that, like, our response is definitely biggest and best where our customers are. So definitely at parks and dog runs. You have to go to where your customers are, for sure.
I agree with that. You know, I started a company and it was more like a product that was solving my own problem, my own CBD brand that somehow just took its own energy and started growing organically. But we did the same thing. We opened up our store, our flagship store, last year in April. So while all these brick and mortars are going online and closing their doors, we just went the opposite direction, because exactly to your point, that's where our customers were. We felt that it's hard to educate people online when it's so noisy and already a saturated marketplace, and it's just so much bad and good information out there, and for our customers to have to go through so much information to select what's real, what's not, what's right, it was just challenging. And so going to our customers, having the brick and mortar, explaining and educating, we started with workshops. We ended up getting a news coverage because of the workshop, because we wanted to bring the community together. We brought in doctors, and we started doing these small, like 70, 80 people workshops behind our store, and gave away a bunch of products and talked about anxiety and what they could do to, you know, natural ways to get rid of anxiety as we were emerging back into our society. And so I love that you guys sort of caught on to that too, because I think a lot of small businesses are still struggling. They're trying to figure out, how do we get back on our feet? What do we do? And they're really suffering online. And when you think back to the community and helping people and start getting thinking outside of the box, that's when things start moving. And I love that you guys actually took the approach and risked it too, because in a sense, it was a risk for us too. I've always been an online thing. Like for me, it was always online. I've had my online store, online business since I was 20. And that's like back in 2000. And so with that said, for me, brick and mortar was like, no, what are you thinking? And my husband was like, yes, we're doing this. And so it was a hard commitment, but it probably the best decision we've made. So good job, you guys. I feel so good that I'm not alone in this. And it kind of validates to hear that, you know, you guys benefited from that strategy as well.
Yeah, I think it sounds like basically in this day and age, we caught on to the fact that people were very, very, were seeking out their community. And so when we were locked up in our apartments, I think we were very, very, you know, that's something that everybody felt that they needed. And I feel like that's why we're also at the same time, we're throwing more workshops. We're also having more events because, you know, like seeks like. And that's how you also build brand loyalty, you know? Jen just recently did a pop-up in at upstate New York. And of course, New Yorkers tend to flee Manhattan and Brooklyn during 3-day weekends. Right. And they found us there. Wow. And they intentionally bought from us there, even though we're literally like a block away.
That's amazing. There's definitely, you're right. There's the need to communicate and see each other in person. It's so important to get back to our old ways of doing things. Tell me a little bit about what's different, social enterprise. Like, how would you differentiate that if someone's listening to it and they don't know what a social enterprise is? Like, just explain to our listeners what it is.
Social enterprise, like there's in the past years, that kind of a business model has come up. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear nonprofit, you hear for-profit, but you know, what is a social enterprise? We call ourselves a social enterprise because what we're doing has impact on society. Mm-hmm. And you know, our mission revolves around several things. One is that we create everything sustainably and ethically. And that means that we think about all the resources and materials that are out there and how can we, you know, reduce our carbon footprint, or how can we create something that is earth friendly and more so biodegradable. So that's one of the things, you know, we tend to use a lot of used, upcycled, recycled materials mm-hmm. to produce our products, as well as some renewable and natural materials. And that's kind of just all we really look at in terms of what we produce from and with. And then one of the other things that we look at is, you know, who makes the products, you know, because as Santos had mentioned, as we were, you know, kind of figuring out dog products in general as new dog parents, there's just not enough transparency out there in terms of products in general, but dog products.
Yeah.
So we set out to partner with different groups of makers and artisans, but not just any maker or artisan. We sought out woman makers.
Mm.
And we also pay them fair living wages. So that's not minimum wage, that's a fair living wage, so that it makes sense that they cover all of their costs, including schooling for their children, and that they have, you know, a sufficient amount of money that they save up for the future. And then our goal is to continue giving them orders so that they can have a stable income. And then amongst that, we've visited, I would say, almost all of the groups that we've worked with, and we kind of look at their whole work situation, their environment, to make sure that it's safe and secure for them. And if they're working from home, that it's safe for them and their families.
I love that. I love that. Thank you. And thank you for walking us through the pillars as to why you're a social enterprise. And I know I get this question a lot, you know, people asking me, well, what's the difference between a for-profit or a social enterprise or a nonprofit? And just to be sure, you guys are nonprofit or for-profit?
We are for-profit.
Okay, yeah. So just to solidify for everyone who's listening, social enterprise can be a nonprofit and a for-profit. So it's a choice. It's just that as long as you have a good mission that's helping other people and it's beyond just making money, it's really impacting our communities in a greater way. What would be the advice, like if somebody's thinking about starting a company and they want to make sure it's a social enterprise, what advice would you give them? What would be a good takeaway, would you say?
Go
ahead, Santos.
I would say that the key words are transparency and responsibility if you want to be a social enterprise. So just if there's any opaqueness in your supply chain, question it, you know. There's a lot of greenwashing going on. Me and Jen talk about this all the time. There are corporations and companies that just take on these catchphrases and use it for marketing purposes. But when it comes down to it, when it comes down to their supply chain, the resources that they're using are questionable or just opaque. You don't get the answers. Or in terms of who they work with, they don't know. They subcontract their work out. So they have no idea the environmental, you know, impact they're making, the working conditions that their makers or workers are under. So I think the key to having a social enterprise, yes, traditionally it is people, planet, and profit, but people and planet come first. And you have to ask the questions. You have to ask the right questions, and you have to ask a lot of them sometimes.
Jennifer, did you want to add to that?
I mean, I think also you kind of have to be passionate. I'm sorry, there's like a police car coming by, I think. New York. I think you need to be passionate and believe in your mission as well. In terms of a social enterprise, you really need to, you know, follow it. And it has to be a part of your personal lifestyle and your personal belief. And I mean, I think that kind of goes for anything that you sell. I'm not saying the mission is being sold. It's just for us, it's actually a real thing. It's something we actually care about and we are passionate about and feel, and we live this way. Like, we actually go out and buy products that are made ethically and sustainably. You know, we try to like reduce, recycle, and reuse. It's just kind of those things that we feel is very important to us. And so we, you know, share that with our community and hope that we create a movement around it.
I love that. And, you know, sometimes it's so interesting. People don't realize how buying a product, like if they come to Gone to the dogs, .co and purchase something, the impact that it's going to make and how it's going to support someone's family and feed a child, or it's just like, just amazing. And that's why I'm obsessed with entrepreneurs and what they do, because I feel like we're doing so much. It's so hard to be an entrepreneur. It's really difficult. It's probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And I think it's the only thing I kind of mostly did in my entire life. But when it comes back to being an entrepreneur, what advice do you guys have? Just, this is my last question. If an entrepreneur is struggling and is almost giving up on their dreams, what would you say for them to do to just stick it through and take one more step?
If they're struggling, I feel like you have to ask yourself questions. Like, are you doing this alone? Do you have a community behind you? Do you have a support system? Because, you know, there might be reasons why they're struggling. Maybe, you know, they aren't marketing their product correctly, or there's no audience for it. There has to be a feedback, you know? But also at the same time, you know, the entrepreneurial life is not easy. Like you said, it helps, even if it's a successful product and we feel like we have an audience and we do feel that we are relatively successful, but having our support system is extremely important, because this is not an easy ride at all by any means.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we totally agree with Santos. Like, we always have to ask those questions. You always have to ask for help. Starting a business is not like all about yourself or all about your business, you know, especially when you're involving the community and you're trying to make an impact. You're responsible for so many people. Like, we are responsible for making sure we send orders to all our partners and that we maintain sustainability, like that we are a sustainable business in order for us to exist and, you know, keep it going. And for us, like, we just always have to ask for help, even though, you know, we've been in this for 2 years plus. I think we were thinking about starting, we were like, have been starting and building up the business for like 3 years. Like, we still have so many questions. Like, we still need to learn how to grow and to scale. And, you know, every month it's different, every year it's different. So we can't say, hey, this is it. This is the hardest. This is like, I'm ready. I'm done. I'm tired. It's like, this is going to be like next month, you know?
Yep.
So,
well, I'm happy that you guys have each other to lean on. That's a huge blessing. And I can see it in both of your faces, how happy you guys are to do this amazing, to do this venture. I mean, it's not just changing lives of other people, but also you're setting a great example for others who have an idea and want to start their own business. So thank you, ladies. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Thank you for sharing your story. And I hope to have you back on the show again.
Oh, you're so very welcome. Thank you again for having us.
And just remind the listeners where they can go to get in touch with you, learn more about your journey, and obviously purchase your products.
So we're at gonetothedogs.co. That's our online shop. And you can also learn more about all our stories and everything about us there. We're located in Brooklyn, New York. That's 103 7th Avenue in Park Slope. You can also find our address online. And you can also find all of our handles and everything if you'd like to follow us on social media.
Amazing. And we'll have everything in our show notes. Thank you, ladies, again.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Maria, for having us.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.